Hey listeners, you're tuning in to a podcast about Kids in the Hall that easily veers off into mature subject matter and includes a whole heck of a lot of swearing. Enjoy the show, eh?
Hello, and welcome to Kith and Tell, a podcast about Kids in the Hall that isn't very popular here, but is really big in France. We hope, at least. We'll be reviewing every episode with witty banter and unmissable segments like Does This Hold Up? And Stu's Big Think Corner.
Yeah!
I'm Hans Seidemann, and I'm joined today, as ever, by Kalina McCourtoff in London, England. Hello, Kalina.
I'm a whiner without dignity.
How never true it is.
Never was a kid line ready-made for me.
No kidding. Also joining us in Victoria is Stu Derek Kotick.
Je ne retourne plus jamais dans ce restaurant.
They should never have put that spaghetti on your head.
The tiny and, hat, though.
Yeah, it was asking for it. And in Vancouver, we also have Trevor Record.
Have some cake.
Trevor, if you want me to leave, just say so.
No.
Trevor, that was perfect.
That was very well done. All right, well, today we'll be reviewing Episode 7 of Season 5, which aired on December 21st, 1994. So let's kick it off with our sketch rundown. This episode we had slow-mo, in which Trevor, played by Mark, tries to get his friend Dave to leave by faking an entire apartment and being in slow motion, instead of just asking his friend nicely to get on their way.
It's like, what was great is that he's also made sure that the hockey on TV is in extra slow motion. And he's like,
he really goes...
pushes that cake into his mouth and just all is all over his teeth.
The way Mark's ability to act that slow-mo is actually a
that was amazing. The way his face moved looked impressive. Like it was in slow-mo. He got the jowls and everything.
I genuinely didn't know.
You know what
first,
I thought must be like the genesis of this one? It's just like, this must be something Mark just was doing at the time. And they're like, how do we turn this? Probably just like,
hey guys, it's funny if I talk slow.
And it was like, okay, Mark, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
You need attention.
Listeners, if you want to listen to this episode in 2x speed, that's totally fine. After slow-mo, though, we do have the next sketch, Ex-Girlfriend Relocation Program, in which Mark breaks up with Kevin, who is a whiner who does not handle things well, and but is a man of independent wealth, and so decides to get her relocated to a city of her choosing in a new profession.
With a new face.
With a new face, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of his other exes is a set of Siamese twins in a carnival somewhere.
She's happy. Yeah. She gets to travel.
She's happy, which is interesting. Anyways, was she? I can't get over whether he was dating only one or the other.
No, I think that was the cover. Twins. Like it just.
She just added a Siamese twin to her.
Yeah, yeah,
okay. Cool.
It's a very sophisticated program.
I should say conjoined twin in this day and age. Yes. And then we have Heart of Gold, the first of a several hooker segments. In this one, John is looking for a hooker with a heart of gold, and they point him in the right direction, which is in front of some fast food joint 3 blocks down for Wendy. Then there's Looking for Love, in which Bruce sits at a desk and slowly tells us about his failures looking for love across the Canadian, Great White North.
Mm-hmm. But all he found was farmers.
All he found was farmers and used farm equipment.
Oh my god, I do have to say, there's this line in there where he talks about, like, trying to find love in a health food store, but all he found was women buying steroids disguised as sea kelp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So...
yeah, Vancouver, baby!
Evergreen bit.
Do you think that Looking for Love was supposed to be Bruce as himself, or Bruce as, like, a character?
I think it was a character, because he has, like, the cigarette going. I think he was trying to be, like too poety performer kind of thing.
It came across very radio host to me, but
maybe.
I like Bruce doing Bruce, if that
Bruce
makes sense.
Bruce on Bruce.
BGB. You know? Yeah.
Bruce on Bruce has a bit, sort of, yeah.
Hot Bruce on Bruce action.
Then we had Want a Date, another Hooker's bit, where they ask a guy if he wants a date, and then they hand him a date, but he ruins the joke because he's from Bahrain, and we all know Bahrainis have no humor.
Bahrain.
You missed Sexist Bossed.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Yes, after Looking for Love, we had Sexist Bossed, in which Kevin is a sexist. Now, maybe sexist is not the right actual term here, because he's not
he's just sexist
so much as he is objectifying boss of all genders.
He cannot help but be very distracted by either secretary.
Sexual organs of any type. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll talk about more in a second.
Stay tuned. Yeah.
Do you wonder what we're going to talk about? Then we have Duck Blind, where Mark and Scott are what appear to be a gay couple going out for an afternoon of hunting and light tea out in a duck blind. And then they get assaulted by a duck.
And beat it to death with like the stub of the rifle.
Oh, that was good.
And pepper spray it for some reason. Yeah. And pepper spray each other.
You know what that reminds me of? Is like, why did you take pepper spray? It was like when my partner and I went walking in Scotland. And my dad was like, did you take a knife? And I was like, there are no animals here. Nothing can kill me.
I mean, there's Scottish people. So, yeah. If you're in Glasgow, you know. sorry, Glaswegians. Anyways, last sketch of this episode was Le Poupi, which is about Kevin and his hard done by status as the fifth member of the Kids in the Hall. But he's huge in France, where he's known by the affectionate nickname Le Poupi, which is French for the poopy. We'll talk more about that shortly, too. But we wanted to start this episode with a segment that we haven't actually done, I think, a dedicated one of these in a while, but does this hold up?
Did everyone miss it?
We know it's all of the kids' favorite part of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Things are changing.
This felt like a good episode to do it on because it does feel like it's a borderline and not just us, like, you know, recontextualizing the kids 30 years later. But we wanted to talk about Sexist Boss and, you know, as in a bit more detail, essentially, this sketch involves Kevin as a boss, an assistant played by Dave comes in who has large breasts, and Kevin just cannot help himself from staring at them and then dictating a letter to her to transcribe that just gets breasts and tits and milk from the breasts and everything inserted into the letter. And then she, you know, quits or files a sexual harassment suit. Fair. Mm-hmm. Which causes Kevin to hire a male assistant, Scott, who also has just a huge dong sticking out, bulging from his pants leg. And then Kevin repeats the exact same thing, but with penis bits. And Scott just happily takes the letter and goes away.
What's the opener when he addresses the dictation to Scott? It's like, is it like, dear penis?
Oh, it's dear penis. Dear as penis. Per my letter of July the Hard Boner. Yeah. So I mean, you know, the question is, does it hold up? I'll leave it to you all to jump in. What do you all think?
I don't see what's objectionable about this. Objectionable. Like, well, how could it not hold up?
Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I think the problem that I have is kind of the way it's set up, which is almost like, oh, it's, you know, we're like, oh my God, okay. We're a little like upset at first. We're like, this a bit uncomfortable. He's commenting on her tits and nipples, blah, blah, blah. And then the joke is, oh, look, he's hired a male assistant and he's doing the exact same thing. And it almost seems like, okay, so the joke should be that, oh, he's just objectifying everybody. But I feel like there's an undertone there that makes me uncomfortable, which is the woman made too big of a deal of it because Scott,
exactly,
as sort of the male assistant, is fine with it and is like, oh, I don't take any umbrage with this because, I don't know, presumably maybe he's like either fine with being objectified or like has no issue with being called out for having a giant dong. But also it's like that it's like, oh, woman in the office just like overreacted to something that's like kind of normal for this person.
Kalina, that's exactly where I was kind of thinking about it too. And in the sense that I always look in these sketches about who's the butt of the joke, and Kevin is the butt of the joke. Mm-hmm. Like, it is supposed to be like, look at this guy who can't contain himself. What an idiot, what an asshole. But then they undercut that, I think, by having Scott do the whole like, oh, that's fine, and just walk away as if it's no big deal, because it then no longer feels like it's as clearly about, look how much of an idiot Kevin is. It's like, look how much of an idiot Kevin is, and is it like, and wouldn't it be nice if ladies didn't overreact like the way Scott did? You
I
know,
mean,
like,
that feels like a bit of a stretch.
Would it have made it better if Scott got really upset?
Like, I don't think that adds anything to it. We would just do it now because it feels more clear about who the cat is. I don't know. I take your point, Kalina. I actually didn't think about that it kind of recontextualizes it as putting blame or culpability on her, or like scorn on her. But
yeah,
I didn't really feel like it was that much. Like, to me, clearly it is about Kevin just being like so over the top objectifying, and I think there you can make the case that it's like, well, is he really accepting it, or what if he's just really dumb, like it's his first day? Because they do Scott as incredibly dumb assistant a couple times.
This is true, but yeah, I don't know. That was my feel about it. So, Trevor, what about you? Did you think this one held up, or
well,
did you think it was appropriately targeted?
You know, I didn't really pick up on that particular nuance, that whole "oh, he doesn't get upset" thing. So, like, I always did think that the laugh line was like, "oh, now he has a male assistant. The problem will be solved." No, it's not solved. He's still doing it, but with a dick instead.
Yeah.
So that I think would be for most people the laugh line. Yeah, like my question to you was just like, had Scott's character also gotten upset about being objectified, would that have made it still a redeemable sketch for you or not?
But then it wouldn't be funny. That's what I have kind of an issue with, the whole kind of joke.
I don't.
Is that that's?
I think if Scott just got up and clocked him, that would be pretty funny, and would put
yeah,
him
that's
in his
true.
Place reasonably well. Like, do treat him like you've treated Cabbage Head, which is like you. He is a person of ridicule, and no one appreciates him. You know what I mean? If you just do that, I think it works a bit better, and then doesn't go on overly long.
Well,
or something,
and eventually
like that,
they killed off Cabbage Head because despite yeah.
this is true,
quite
yeah.
spectacularly.
Yeah. The other thing about this sketch is, it's a shame. I mean, I don't think it's entirely like, I don't think it's entirely irredeemable. I think it's like, it was a well-intentioned sketch that they undercut in the end. But I did also want to say, they have some like fantastic use of language in this sketch that is just like, if you're gonna be a creepy dude, like they use some of the best things. Like, we already mentioned that, dear penis, yeah. I erection your letter of hard boner.
He said tomatoes a lot, which I've never heard before.
Yeah, but what was the other one he said? Like, just out of nowhere, he just goes, milk from your breasts. Like, oh yeah, I'm, besides Hooters, I'm very happily milk from your breasts. And it's just like, it's so over the top. So like, in that sense, like, it made it very clear, like, this guy's like absolutely an idiot. And I did appreciate that. And I just wish they had stuck the landing better.
Yeah, I don't know. I really appreciate Kalina's take on that, because it definitely didn't occur to me that having Scott be okay with it kind of recontextualized that. Although I do think that's holding them to a pretty high standard of
sure.
moral behavior, especially because, like, at no point would I would say the Dave character is portrayed as like shrill or overreacting in their interactions. It's very much like, this person is egregiously bad.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like, I think the Dave character is entirely sympathetic all the way through.
Like, I guess, Kalina, I look at this and I go, I think it was appropriately targeted. I think it would have held up had they just finished it a little bit better. But I don't think, like, the conceit of the sketch is, like, itself something that you couldn't necessarily do today, or that, like, wouldn't work today if it what had been delivered a little bit more cleanly at the end. What do you, like, do you think this is something that you could get done today and have it work? Or is it just, like, is it too much of a rough start to continue?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can make anything that they want, but
true.
I just don't think
true.
It'd be very funny. And I think also, like, I just got a bit of like, and I know it was meant to have that effect at the end where he's like, good looking kid. And I was like, gross. Oh,
right,
boy.
Right.
I just, you know, it's really hard. And I think this has probably come up before, but just like where we're at, how many years out from Me Too and this shit keeps happening. I'm just like, I don't think you can.
Yeah.
And I know, again, this is like, I'm sure we'll have pushback whenever we speak to any of the kids about shit like this. Yes, but like, yes. It's just the truth. It's like, look, we love tons of your sketches. This one, I just don't think could be done today. And that's just the way it is.
It occurs to me this one is actually very similar and reminds me a lot of the new employee, the new hire, like the one where they bring the gong in or the woman in, and then it's like gong. Now
they're all tripping.
Now
over
we all have
yeah.
to like harass her, basically.
Yeah,
it's got a similar kind of vibe to it, right? Which I can't remember. What did we think about that one in the end? I think we had similar
a little rough, but
too.
Ultimately funny.
Yeah. Well, Trevor, any last thoughts on Does This Hold Up before we move on to our main event for this episode?
I went into it saying, I think it was fine. I understood who the joke was about, but now that you've all explained it, I'm like, well, maybe it's not fine. And I didn't understand that. So, yeah.
That's what this podcast is about, learning and growing as
learning
people.
And growing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Growing like a hard on in your trousers.
Hey,
okay.
Cut it.
And on that note, speaking of people that aren't funny, Le Poupie.
I fucking love Le Poupie. So, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, I feel like I'm the Kevin of this cast.
no way.
Actually, no, clean it.
I am, absolutely.
Yeah. So for folks who didn't do the homework assignment, as Trevor said last episode, this one is basically the kids are getting interviewed at a panel discussion. They only have four microphones. The interviewers keep asking about the four of them, and Kevin just keeps having to lean over to another microphone to assert that he exists.
Mm-hmm.
There's five of us.
And then... makes an aside that he's huge in France, where it then cuts to Dave, who is a French like mime type person, explaining the comedy stylings of Le Poupie, as he is known in France, or The Poupie. And it then goes on to like show Kevin as Le Poupie doing a live show for a like sold out theater of 20,000 people in Paris. He does a little tour of France with a sliding backdrop.
Amazing.
And Dave explains the genius of Le Poupie by effectively just talking about why Kevin isn't funny. Yeah, and that's pretty much the bit. I think we all love this mostly, and I'm curious to hear why it landed for all of us. And so maybe let's start with our resident Kevin expert, Kalina, what made this work.
I mean, what is that annoying squeaky sound? you know what? Like it was funny that you're like, okay, it opens up as a press conference. And then, you know, you have Kevin actually saying, oh, but I'm like big in France. And I don't know why, but like after that starts to get explained by Dave and we just cut to this scene in which Kevin's shaving and just cuts his cheek.
Okay.
And it goes on for a
lost
too long.
It.
I
and he like he
did.
Like whimpers to himself pathetically, and Kalina was like clapping her hands.
Yeah, he crumples to the floor like his hands
just,
in a rictus
just,
grip,
just
like
broken, and like he curses God at himself, and Kalina's like, my sweet mime boy.
It was I don't know why that absolutely broke me.
You're fucked up.
A minute after that, as they were going through sort of the montage of like the painted backgrounds of all these Parisian landmarks, and he's just like holding cheese in a baguette and then like a camera, I was just, I don't know, the dopamine hit me hard.
I love the shots of him like just like messing around with spaghetti as like an entire audience of French people in tuxedos and evening gowns like laugh uproariously.
I want to call to that. It's funny to me that this theater is like a very fancy theater.
Yes.
Like his comedy stylings in France are appealing to like the upper crust. Like he is the comedian for the glitterati of France.
Just them. It's just like his popularity in France is such that everyone wants to go, and you would have to be wealthy to
only.
Be able to go to a Le Poupie show.
Exactly.
Yes. It's like at the Taylor Swift of 1994.
That's
in
how
France.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say I think I liked this bit, and I oftentimes struggle with the Kevin like self-deprecating things, but this one he leans into it so hard that and it's not just a lot of times I think when Kevin does the self-deprecating bits they're more monologue-y or they're just kind of Kevin talking about why he thinks he sucks. But because this one had so much built up around it and so much lore behind it, like I think it really landed in a way that I don't find some of his self-deprecating bits do. And I think, and Trevor, you mentioned this earlier, but like I think part of it is that Dave contributed to this one.
I think
that
so.
Description of Le Poupie's comedy was probably a Dave script.
I think that
script
is actually
bit.
How Dave thinks about Kevin.
Thinks.
But like that he legitimately does love Kevin's humor, despite the fact that he's like, you would go to point A to point B, or that's what I would do. But instead, Kevin takes a really meandering path and intentionally avoids what to me seems like the obvious joke.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Like, and I think we were having a bit of debate about this earlier, but I feel like, the joke is, we appreciate him. We hope you do too. But you guys probably don't see how much shit we have to trim and edit and like bring together for him. And but also just like it's a loving jibe at him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this sketch follows that format that Dave describes of the like taking the meandering path?
100%.
You could argue that his little trip across France is the meandering visit to the forest before he goes to the final punchline C, which is not actually all that funny.
Okay. Do we have a moment for Stu's big brain corner?
Oh, okay.
Please, let's hit.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me cue the music here. Yeah. Okay. And go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Stu's Big Brain Corner. So on this one, I'm sure as you all know, Mr. Show always had one theme that would carry through each episode, and all the sketches would be entirely distinct, but would have some element that kind of tied them together. And it occurred to me, slow motion or slowing things down is the run through on this one. Because it starts with the slow-mo. Ooh. The ex-girlfriend says she wants to slow things down in the relationship. Okay. The Heart of Gold opens with, I'm going to slow things down a little bit. And then just gets a mopey long monologue. The hookers, I can't deal with this because it's mayonnaise.
Thank you.
The duck blind I haven't quite linked together quite yet. But then Le Poupie, they start the conceit, which is Kevin isn't really one of the kids in the hall, and then it literally meanders through the countryside of France. And I noticed, too, what he does this, because he has the three different backdrops in front of the Eiffel Tower and Moulin Rouge and then, like, a fucking record store or something.
French countryside, I think, too. Yeah.
Every time he's holding something different, because first he's holding a bottle of wine, and then it's a baguette, and then it's a camera, and it's like, And then the whole bit about, like, it meanders around the punchline and comes back to it in the end. Because the punchline is just, again, one of my favorite parts of Kids in the Hall when I get to hear them say fuck on television. It's fucking right. Kids in the Hall. and
which was a solid end, by the way.
Oh, it was, like, that was a just, tremendous, that was a killer Kevin landing. I feel like there was a through line on this one, and I was really pleased about it. That's it. That's the end.
This reminds me, we haven't reviewed them yet, but we did, spoiler alert, we have watched the new season, and there's a sketch in the new season where Kevin is, like, also portrayed as being the one guy who's still holding on to the glory of Kids in the Hall and owns all of the old master tapes and things like that.
Yeah,
and this
lost
feels
Kevin
like it's
tapes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this feels like setting up well for that. There's a through line from here to there, I feel like, you know.
I wonder if Kevin is a little bit of a collector, because they make reference in the framing narrative for the Mouth Congress documentary that Kevin still has the Mouth Congress stuff. And then
But
it was Paul Bellini who took all the camera footage.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, like, just they had it as the conceit that it was like Kevin would have the archives, of course. And, like, we know that Kevin's a music guy and collects records. So I was like, I wonder if he's
loves
a little
Depeche Mode.
Loves Depeche Mode. Sucks!
So, I don't know if there's much more to say about this one. I think it was an unexpected delight. Did any of us remember that this sketch even existed before we watched
it? I've never seen it before.
Yeah, like I only maybe have and I might be like pretending or like projecting that I have a memory of it from back in the day, but certainly didn't stand out for me.
I think
the only other thing I had to say about it was, like, I think that this was vibing off of something, and it wasn't Kevin, but like back in the 90s there were a couple American comedians that were seen as kind of hacky, but that were extremely popular in France, as the legend would go. And I'm trying to remember, like, who was it? Was it, like, Gallagher or something?
I was just saying, was it Gallagher?
Yeah.
I don't think it would be like maybe Carrot Top. I mean, I can imagine prop comics having that work because it would like carry across language a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Pauly Shore joke in there.
Yes, they do.
They do. But Pauly Shore is actually popular elsewhere at that time, at least. At that time.
Come on, he just really had a moment, didn't he?
He really did. Shore, he was, man, huge.
So big. What's he doing now?
Dead.
Pauly Shore, right in.
Discount cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, I will say, though, so speaking of the prop comedy, though, like Kevin's stage bit, it was weirdly funny, but like not funny because it was funny. Like
the oversized suit, like the suit's too big and a tiny, tiny little hat.
And but like even just him twirling spaghetti going la 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 la. And it's like, I don't know why that is funny, but it is funny. Like,
but the interesting thing about this sketch, and I know this is my own experience of it, but like I was still riding the high of the first minute of the sketch.
you're still like that razor cut. Oh my God.
I was just like completely like jazzed up, and it did not matter what they did for the last half of the sketch. But then you had sort of the joke about like fuck the kids in the hall, and I was like, well, wasn't that a nice meal? And I'm like the last course wasn't that great.
You know what? No. We need to point out that of course is going to appeal to Kalina because it's lovingly letting Kevin do whatever he wants and also hating on France. Two of Kalina's favorite things in the entire world.
Paris was
Stu,
fine.
I just had a big brain Stu thought.
Ooh.
And I'm gonna join on the big brain Stu.
Please, I concede the corner to you.
Cue the music.
This episode follows the Kevin sketch progression.
Oh, unified.
So you have this slow-mo premise, and maybe there's an obvious place it could go, but instead it meanders around, it goes to the woods where there's a duck blind for hunting, and then it goes to a totally different ending that no one else would choose to go to, Le Poupée.
It goes to France.
It goes to France and meanders around there a bit more too. It's like it's meta, man. It's layers on layers. It's a fractal. It's, you know, yeah.
Ooh, the hand like, draws itself.
The yes, perception exactly. of the performers, the Moulin Rouge, the hookers, the sluttiness. Mm.
Oh,
yes. One of the hookers had to learn to be French or became French, you know, which is where Kevin's big, right? We've solved it, gang.
I really, as a tangent, I loved that bit, and I don't think anybody else did, where they were like, you would tell me if I got skanky. You told me when I started to become French.
It worked
like,
out
I
well
just thought
for
that
you.
Was great. It worked out great for you.
Oh, I forgot to mention that sketch in the sketch rundown, because it wasn't on the old Kith fan thingamajigs, but yeah, stank leg, one of the hookers gets accused of having a skank leg, whatever that means.
No, it was. She was a
skanky old cat.
Skanky
old
pig.
Yeah.
Oh, skanky old pig. Down. That French accent, man, it's thick.
Mm-hmm.
I heard skanky leg, and I was like, okay, whatever. whatever a skanky
also,
leg is.
As I also love as a tangent that she's like, do you think I'm a skanky old pig? He goes, no, you're not skanky. And I was like,
I know. That was going to be the joke.
Okay.
But it just flew through.
Mm.
And then it went somewhere else. Hans, I love that. The duck blind.
Thank you.
Diet.
Thank you.
That's
well,
good.
You know, yeah. I'm just picking up what you're putting down, my pal.
I love it. Okay. Smell it when I'm stepping in.
Let's all take a dip in the lake.
Refresh yourself.
Unless anyone else has any thoughts about Le Poupée, then I say we talk about we finish off by talking about our standout. If you feel it merits it, your worst sketch of the episode. And you know what? Let's not forget to do our rating out of 5 skanks.
Oh my God. Didn't do that last
We didn't do that last episode. So let's, Trevor, let's start with you. What was your standout this time?
Well, Le Poupée is the obvious standout for me, so mm-hmm. I think I want to then just give an honorable mention instead. So Le Poupée gets 4.5 twirling forks full of spaghetti for me, but I'd say that ex-girlfriend relocation program gets a solid 4 out of 5 too. I think it's good.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, just the whole like thing where he has a whole life set up for them, and you know, I think it's a solid premise.
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 Trevor, I really appreciated the chemistry between Dave and Kevin in that, where he can't pronounce his name. Like, that's such a throwaway joke, but they made it really work.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of that sketch in many ways, yeah.
Mr. Jackersoffner.
It's Jackson. It's not
Jackson,
hard.
It's so easy.
I like it's like he sort of expected that he was going to get broken up with too, though.
And so
has a guy ready at the go.
He's on retainer.
I mean, he's a very wealthy man. Who knows how long he's had that guy waiting for the breakup, you know?
And they use the same shitty Michael Madsen Reservoir Dogs-esque wig they put on Dave when they make him the terrible assassin.
Yeah. Did you have any stinkers, or did you think there were any stinkers, Trevor?
The hookers were great. I mean, so I guess the hookers.
Yeah. Mm. Stu, what were your tops this week?
I think, okay, Le Poupi, I would give 3.5 skanks out of 4, except it has that fuck as the last thing as a punchline, which I think bumps it up to 4. I think it's the standout. I think it's the most weird and it's the funniest. Plus, I love the meta commentary that we were bringing up of like, is Dave just ripping on his writing partner and being like, Kevin sucks, you guys. Not like a sweet Dave. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Do it.
Oh, he appreciates
it. I think it's
him.
It comes out of a point of view.
I think
at this
it's
stage
love
in their writing career. I don't know that that's true.
I think it's loving, but quite, like, you know, there's that sibling-esque ribbing in there. And I like that.
It's the way we all talk to each other on this
and
podcast.
And we all love it and appreciate it all the time. Yes.
I think the worst for me is Looking for Love. As much as I love Bruce, it wasn't funny, like, at all. It was just kind of him doing a character that I didn't understand or appreciate. So I'm going to say that was 0 skanks. That was just giving it away for free, being a slut for comedy.
Fair. Kleena, how about you?
Also going to give it to Le Poupi. I need to see more of Kevin just cutting his face open. I don't know why.
Wrong with you?
She wants to see her hero bleed. Yeah.
He's in so much pain when it happens.
That's what Kalina loves about him.
It's
the pain.
So viscerally uncomfortable too. Yeah. Like.
So I'm gonna give that 4 tiny hats out of 5.
Oh, that's a fair call. That's a fair call. Yeah.
But I am gonna give my honorable mention to the intro, the slow talking Mark. I thought that was one of the best probably cold opens we've had in a little while, a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And then as for worst, it's kind of a tie for me between the sexist boss for reasons mentioned, but also the Bruce monologue, because aside from the kelp joke and sort of the Canadian prairies having no love as just farmers, I was like, I'm not quite sure what this is sort of referential of. It wasn't very direct, and it kind of was a conceit that didn't land.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think I generally agree. I had, I think I also will give it to La Poupi, which
is so fun to say.
It is very fun to say, which I will give, I'll give it 4 murderous ducks out of 5.
Nice.
For all the reasons that have already been mentioned. And then, so for me, I would say the bottom was the hookers, who are quickly for me becoming like another set of cops where I know you all love the hookers, but they don't do it for me for whatever reason.
They're tiresome.
Yeah, fair. And I'm kind of tired of the bit. But I want to give an honorable or dishonorable mention to the Bruce sketch for the Looking for Love, in that, like, if it weren't for the hookers, it probably would be my worst one. But there is one thing to it, which is just, it is really Canadian. It's extremely Canadian. And I think if the pacing maybe had been I don't know why it needed to be as slow as it was. I think if he had picked up the pace, it might have been a bit funnier. But it did not work for me. I have him, I say, Bruce at his desk doing his best David Byrne.
I thought it was like he had a good rhythm and pattern, there just weren't enough laugh lines, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's, I think he was trying to go slower maybe to play off the audience, but the audience was not really having it, so it just felt kind of slow and draggy. Anyways, but so dishonorable mention for that. It you know, needed more work,
Or maybe we just
needed
didn't
a touch
get
of
it.
Kevin.
Sprinkle it in like old.
That
days.
Was the meandering going to the forest part. Yeah, going to the Canadian prairies.
Can I quickly check with you guys what you feel about the Scott and Mark hunting sketch? Because like that also wasn't like all that funny to me.
We're gradually circling around this entire episode being a bit of a stinker outside of Le Poupi, basically.
Yeah,
it's not a strong episode overall, I would say.
The hunting thing, it does have that great moment where he beats the duck to death and then yes. pepper sprays it. Like that, we all laughed at that.
I liked the characters in Duck Blind. Like I just found their
sort
particular
of like nebulously effeminate kind of thing.
Well, I mean, they're a gay couple.
Well, no, because he makes some comments.
I thought
they were friends.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's implied.
No, because when he says, like, oh, I came here with Larry, and they're like, oh, and how was that? And he's like, well, he was cruel. And it's like, it just, I really get gay couple vibes out of it. But, it, like, and I liked Mark's bit there. Like, I what are you going to do with that? Mercy Christmas. I don't know. Like, it just is very sweet, sweet boys, I guess. I didn't think
it was a couple, per se, though. I thought it could have been, like, they're definitely effeminate. They're probably gay. But yeah. I thought they might have been, like, friends who maybe hook up, but like I didn't necessarily get anything about them being in a relationship.
Duck hunters with
se.
Benefits, yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
my,
exactly.
My question was about the props and the set. Like,
yeah,
what was the point of it being so janky?
Because they spent all their money on the coal chute last episode.
Yeah.
they all they could do is get a lake screen and some fake reeds, and that was it. That's all they had money for.
I did like that the gun still had the price tags on them.
Yes, the gun with
that
the price
was a nice
tag
touch.
Was good. The tea set was kind of funny. The duck, mm-hmm. like when the duck attacked, I laughed out loud.
The wings flapped.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Just so it's like
props
the jankiness of the duck made it funnier to me. Yeah.
I also like the double socked but the glitter socks.
The glitter socks.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to hear your views. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hell
yeah.
Yeah,
that's Kalina's big brain corner. What did we think about the ducks?
I think they're unlimited, frankly.
They ought to be.
They ought to be.
All right, that's a little Canadian joke. That's like a little Canadian joke for our Canadian listeners. Ducks unlimited.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for our episode 7 review. Join us next week for episode 8, which will be hosted by Kalina.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you can hopefully find us on whatever social media survives the gladiatorial ring. We're mostly at Kith and Telpod, pretty much everywhere. So find us there and weigh in on your favorite sketch, and we'll have some gifts for you. Jeez, if we're on TikTok, we might have videos by that point. Who knows?
Ooh,
you know, we could join
the
future.
The world.
Yeah.
It's
but either way,
future.
Thanks for listening to Kith and Tell.
Bye.
Zutalor.